This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Sober Rebel podcast. This is the show where I talk to people about their sober journey and what they enjoy about being sober. We talk a bit about how they got sober, how long they've been sober, but we spend most of the time discussing those benefits, the things that they're doing now that they'd never have done as a drinker. And today I'm talking to Sarah, who I first met on Sober Instagram. So we met on Instagram. So hello, Sarah. Tell me a little bit about your sober journey. When did you get sober?
It's over 5 years ago. So I celebrated my 5 year soberversary on the 28th of December. So I've been sober 5 years and 3 months-ish. Yeah. Back in 2019. So it's before the pandemic, which people are always surprised about, because I think a lot of people decided they were either going to quit or they were going to go large during lockdown. So it was one way or the other, really, wasn't it? And I'm just glad that I quit before all that kicked off, because
that's a lot, though, like, to be dealing with. So you were only 4 or 5 months sober when the pandemic started. That was the world turning upside down.
Yeah, I think there's probably, that was probably a good thing, because no one was allowed out to play. You know, we all had to stay at home, and so the temptation probably wasn't there as much. I wasn't knocking about with friends. There was, you know, no temptations, no celebrations, no holidays. Everything was cancelled. So maybe in hindsight, that was not a bad thing for that initial part of the journey, because as we know, that's the hardest bit, is that initial 6-12 months. It's a long time, but that's the bit that's the hardest.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that one. It's certainly the bit where you need the most focus, isn't it?
Mm.
So what was it that led you to say, look, I'm going to stop drinking?
I've thought long and hard about this, you know, and I was, even last night in the shower, I was like, how am I going to answer this question? Because I could give you 100 reasons why I quit, but they're all excuses. Realistically, if I'm honest, I'd got myself into a bit of a bad place mentally. And look, I'm not unique. I guess that's where I want to start with the answer to this. I'm not a unique person. This is my journey would happen to anyone. You know, there's nothing special about my journey or why I became sober. I'm just a normal person who happened to drink too much for myself. It became a problem. There were a couple of life events that happened around that time that influenced that decision. And one was in 2018, at the end of 2018, I broke a leg and I live in quite a remote village and I wasn't able to drive. And it was a bad break. I had a full leg cast. I wasn't able to move. And I've got 2 kids and I was predominantly sat in an awful lot of pain with a full leg cast on for about 3 months. And then I wasn't able to drive until February 2019. So from September to February 2019, I was immobile, unable to drive and reliant on friends and family to look after me. And that was I think it knocked my confidence an awful lot. I don't like asking people for help. I can do it myself. I'm a strong woman. And unfortunately, I found myself in a situation where I had to rely on other people. And that was really, really hard. And around the same time, my kids were starting to grow up a little bit. I'd quit work predominantly to look after them. I was a career woman, loved my career, loved my job, loved the money and the independence. And I think that was all playing a bit of a part of it as well. And I'd been out of work for a couple of years then and sort of looking after the house and the kids, running side businesses. I ran a successful quilting company making keepsakes for people out of baby clothes and stuff. And that was all fine, but it wasn't what I was doing before. I was a business analyst, I was in tech, it was digital and fast-paced and professional. So I'd lost a little bit of myself as well. And I think that played into that lack of confidence and direction, not really knowing where to turn or who I was anymore. Is this me now? Am I just a mum? And I say just a mum. You know, we know this is the most important job to our children. They rely on us. But I'd lost who I thought I was. Who am I if I'm not mum? And I think that was a big thing that was playing around at that time. And then my mum found herself in some difficulty. I lost my nana, and she was quite a important person to me. And then soon after, I lost my grandmother, my granny, and that's my mum's mum. And my mum didn't cope very well with that at all, and she found that really difficult. And as a result, she came to live with us, and that was difficult, because, you know, I'm now living with my parent again, but she's living under our roof. And we were very worried about her state of mind and how she was coping. And I think that was also a stress that I didn't need. So around that time, I'd started taking antidepressants to try and lift my mood. And I was speaking to a therapist at the time and trying to work through the issues that I had around my self-esteem and the challenges that we were facing with my mum and all this kind of stuff. And anyway, it boiled down to a conversation that I had with the therapist that I was seeing. And I think it was the penultimate session, and she sat down and she said to me, "You mentioned you were drinking last night again. Well, last time we spoke, you'd been drinking the night before, and we meet on a Thursday. That's a Wednesday night. You know, are you how much are you drinking?" And I said, "Well, probably a bottle of wine most nights, perhaps a couple of glasses of whiskey with my husband when we're watching telly, in addition to the bottle of wine." And she said, "That's not normal, you know." And gut instinct, I knew that's not normal. That's not, I never saw people drinking in the house a full bottle of wine to themselves. But subliminally, and in the back of my mind, I've seen videos and Instagram posts, and you know, it's a mum culture. The kids are in bed, I'm having a glass of wine. Surely everyone's having a bottle of wine on the night time. You know, a bottle of wine is three glasses of wine in my head. That's three large glasses, only three glasses of wine in a bottle. That's surely not too much. But to hear it from someone in that capacity, as someone who is advocating for mental health, who is paid to treat me for the issues that I'm facing, for her to turn around and say, "Do you think that's normal?" And the question was aimed at me, and I had to reflect quite a lot on that. She asked that question to provoke that response in me, and I took it away, and it played on my mind a lot, a lot, a lot. And anyway, fast forward, sort of. So that was in around September time. By November, I felt like I was in a much stronger place. We'd managed to get my mum into her alternative accommodation, so things were starting to feel a little bit. I'd been driving, my leg brake was fully healed. I started going out running again, so things had started changing a little bit. And I decided to come off the antidepressants, and I stopped those in November. But that, and I'd stopped seeing my therapist in September, October time. But the thing that she said to me still played on my mind. It was like an itch, you know. It was like a scar that wouldn't heal. And I kept thinking about it and thinking about it. And every time I had a drink, I thought about it. And I reflected on how many times have I tried to stop and I've not been able to. How many times have I done dry January or Stoptober and I've made it to the first week? You know, if I didn't have a problem, surely I'd be able to stop drinking for a full month. It's not that long, it's 30 days. But I was struggling, I struggled to do it. And it was when someone says to you in that capacity, "Do you think that's normal?" And I didn't. And I think that was it. That was a gut punch. And that was the bit that turned around and said, "You know what? It's probably time to do something about this." It just so happened, dry January is coming up. There's a lot of talk about that over December. And I was thinking, reflecting on what I've been told and how I was feeling, I'm going to do it. I've come off the antidepressants. Life is good. I'm out running. My mum's sorted. Things are great. I'm going to do dry January. I'm going to prove I can do it, because then I don't have a problem. If I can do it, I don't have a problem. And so that was my goal. And then I went to visit my brother, and I visited my brother, And we stayed over at his house. And if he listens to this podcast, he'll laugh because I'm effectively blaming him for the worst hangover that made me stop drinking for now 5 years and 3 months. So we drink together. We had a good laugh. We stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning, putting the world to rights. And then I had to get up with the kids the next morning, who were fast asleep in their bed. And it was not a pleasant experience. And I did not feel well. My husband and I, on the journey back from visiting my brother, said, shall we just stop now? You have that feeling when you've had a drink. Never again. I'm never drinking again. And I was like, why don't we take advantage of this feeling now to start dry January? And then we'll just finish on the 28th of January. If we start on the 28th of December, we'll finish early. Job done. We'll do that. And my husband said, okay, I've got this podcast that someone at work recommended to me. And it was called The 30 Day Experiment. It's by Annie Grace, and she wrote The Naked Mind, and she's one of the first people that I followed. And I will sing the praises of that book until I take my last breath, because that 100% was the kickstart that I needed that stopped me from drinking. And it was straightforward coping mechanisms, just written out in a very easy day-by-day way, journaling, reading about stories, sending you off down rabbit holes to go and read up on other people. It was perfect. So we started listening to that podcast, to the sorry, the audio book, on the way home from the mammoth session and the terrible hangover that I had from my brother's the night before. And we listened to that the first day, because it's day by day in chapters. And I listened to the first day, and I looked at my husband, Adam, and I just knew there was something different about this time. Something had happened, something had shifted. So, and that was it. That was the first day. New Year's Eve came up. So we quit on the 28th of December, and then New Year's Eve happened. And there was a little bit of remorse that I'd started it early. And I think that's a really interesting feeling. And it's something that I think a lot of people and yourself will be able to relate to, which is it's never the right time to quit. Because you've got a holiday, you've got a weekend event coming up, you've got a wedding, you've got a birthday, you've got a christening, you've got afternoon drinks, you've booked that bottomless brunch with your mates 2 weeks on Tuesday. You can't possibly miss that. It'll never be the right time. And people say that about having kids, changing jobs, moving house. It's never the right time. The right time is right now. You can find excuses every single day for not quitting. You can find those excuses every day, and you'll never do it. That's the way that I sort of approach it. It's
Yeah.
people will say, I'm going to quit on the first of next month, and that's fine if you know that you are not lying to yourself, because that's what I used to do. I'll get this holiday out of the way, I'll have a big blowout, and then I'll quit. And I
Yeah.
kind of think there was something powerful about quitting on the 28th of December and then going through a monumental event such as New Year's Eve. And not drinking, actually, because if you can get through that kind of party without drinking, the next one's easier, and then the next one's easier. And that's quite a big deal, you know, your New Year's Eve, it's a big drinking day.
And you wake up New Year's Day feeling amazing.
Yes. Up early in the morning, a good night's sleep. And I think it goes back to that. We'd press play on the audiobook. We were 3 or 4 days into that audiobook now. We can't start again. Yeah, so that's kind of how it happened. And then I guess on that journey, continuing down that line and why we continued to stop, I think it was the reading and it was the audio books that we picked up. So the book that I was reading, The 30 Day Experiment, in the first few chapters, signposted me to another person that I advocate for. And I think you've seen me talk about him before, which is William Porter and the Alcohol Experiment. That book is incredible.
Yeah, it is.
He just lays down those facts. You know, he's like, this is a poison. You can call it whatever you want, but it's a poison and it's a drug. You know, and I think and his straightforward way of talking is just really resonated with me. And it was all just facts, fact after fact. And I think that was something that I needed to hear at that time. By quitting, you're doing a great thing for your body. You are giving your body a break. You're almost detoxifying your body. And that's great. And for 30 days, these are the things that you will expect to feel better about in 30 days. But if you did it for 2 months, this is what you would expect to feel. And if you did it for 3 months, this is what you could expect to feel. And there was something that he said to me, and it's ridiculous, isn't it? But you hold on to little bits of things to keep you going. And he said in one of his chapters when I read his, so I listened to his audio, but he said, one thing that I noticed when I'd quit drinking after about 3 months is my hair started growing back. Well, my hair had started thinning. My nails are always brittle. And I weren't sure if I was becoming perimenopausal at 37. It's quite young for me. That probably wasn't it. It was probably the drink. But you never blame it yourself on the drink. It's always another problem. It's always something else. So that was quite interesting. And that was one of the things when I got to the end of January. And I'd done dry January, I'd done my 30 days experiment. That was one of the things of, but if I could get to 3 months, these are the other things that I might experience. So shall we just see if we can get there? Let's just do 3 months. And that was it. And then the goalpost kept moving. As a runner, you know.
Well, I am now. I wasn't a runner when I swam.
We'll talk about the marathon post in a sec, because I thought that was incredible, that marathon post. I'd love to hear you vocalize what you spoke about the other day again, because I thought that was really, it was funny. It was a funny comment.
I think I know which post you're talking about, where somebody had sort of had a bit of a go at me for portraying that sobriety was all becoming a size zero and running marathons. Well, I've never run a marathon and I'm not a size zero. I find that a little bit insulting. But you know, it's that, why can't it be, was my take on it. You know, okay, do you. But for me, I'd had this secret burning desire to be a runner. I'd always wanted to run, told myself I couldn't. And in sobriety, you've got time, you've got energy, go for it, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think what drink gives you is a hobby. And I don't call it a habit. I didn't have a drinking habit. It was a hobby. And my drinking infiltrated into every thing that I did. You're going on holiday. When I envisage myself on holiday, I envisage myself with a glass of wine in my hand, watching the sunset or watching my kids play in the pool. If I'm going out and I'm watching a band, I'm not just watching a band. If I envisage myself there, I've got a bottle of beer in my hand. And it's everything that I did had to involve drink. And it was not just that. And I think you've spoken about this before. It's about the noise of having the noise of wanting a drink. When do you drink? How much do you drink? Are you drinking faster than everyone else? Is there enough here for everyone? If someone orders a bottle of wine and there's only four glasses there, I'm like, one bottle of wine ain't enough. There's only three glasses of wine in a bottle, as far as I'm concerned. There's four glasses here. We're all getting shortchanged. And if anyone pours a tiny bit in, straight away, noise in my head, that's not enough. When am I allowed, if I drink that quick, when am I allowed to top it up again? What's the etiquette? And it's the noise all the time. The thing is, when you quit, that noise eventually, not right away, it takes time, but eventually it goes away, and you have to fill that noise and that extra time that you've got. That you're not filling up with your hobby of drinking, you have to fill it with something else. And that could be running, it could be train modeling, it could be gardening, it could be anything. You could take up drama classes, salsa classes, but you do need to fill that time, because otherwise you feel like you've lost out on a hobby. It's something that you enjoyed to a point. Until you didn't, but it was there, and it was something that you did, and it became part of your life, and it was woven into everything that you did. And sometimes the thing that you thought you enjoyed doing, you actually only enjoyed it because you were having a drink. And that becomes quite apparent when you stop drinking, after a time.
It does. The amount of time you spend, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
It is. And it's funny now, because I can reflect on the times where the hobby was the drink. That was the bit that I enjoyed, because I do less of those things now that included drink before, I guess. So I spend less time sitting around in a pub with people, because there's only so much you can do with that before you get a bit bored without the drink. And that doesn't appeal as much. But I do other things more than I used to do. I go to theatre a lot more, and to the cinema, and go out for meals a lot more. Because obviously you have the capacity to be able to do that. So you have time, you're not worried about driving because you're not drinking, and you have the extra money to be able to spend on it as well. Because let's be honest, I was spending quite a lot of money on my hobby before. It was quite an expensive hobby. And in comparison, lacing up some trainers and going for a run instead is a much better hobby.
It is. It's still expensive, though. Let's not.
Well, I mean, when I first started out, when I started out on Couch to 5K, and I was exactly the same as you. So I think one of the things that I mentioned to you before was freeing up that time and quitting the hobby of drink allowed me space and time to do other things. And I knew that I was overweight. So, and I was, and that's not me being, self-conscious or anything like that. I was overweight. My BMI was in the obese category, and I'd become very big due to inactivity and a lot of water that I was retaining due to the drinking that I was doing. And also, I could never meet any of my health goals because after a bottle of wine, that tube of Pringles looks way more appetizing than it did beforehand when I had no willpower. And it's really funny. I was counting calories on MyFitnessPal, and the first thing that I used to do in the morning is put 500 calories from a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
So the rest of my day was around trying to get enough calories in around that bottle. But I wasn't stopping the wine.
No.
No. The wine is non-negotiable. That was the first thing I put in the morning. The rest of my diet had to fit in around that bottle of wine. But once I'd had that bottle of wine in the night time, and my calories were so low, the cravings come in, and you've got no willpower to stop it. Your impulse drive when you're drinking is much higher, and you can't control that. As much as I tried, I couldn't. And it wouldn't just be a handful of Pringles, it'd be the entire tube, it'd be seven or eight biscuits, and it was just mindless feeding whilst watching the television, refusing to go to bed because I was having my time now. I've been a busy person today. I've been looking after the kids, and I am going to have this time to myself. And it blew any kind of health goals that I had out of the water, unfortunately. And that is, yeah, that was a big kicker for me. And it's when the hobby finished, when I controlled the hobby, I stopped the hobby of drinking. I had the space and capacity then to be able to start managing some of those other health goals. And it's been the biggest impact on my life, bar none. And it's funny, we were talking about, does every ex-drinker become a size zero marathon runner? Well, if they want to, that's the key is, a sober person will be sober. That's the goal. The goal isn't to become a size zero marathon runner. The goal is to not drink anymore. But that's going to make time for other things. And yeah, so I picked up my Couch to 5K, which I've been trying to do before, and really struggled. Because I didn't have that consistency, because my first glass of wine was going to take priority over going for a run in the evening, and
Yeah.
then park run in the morning was never going to happen because that happens at 9 o'clock, and I'd had a skinful the night before. I wasn't going out on a park run.
You actually started the running hobby whilst you were still drinking, and just it wasn't happening for you.
Yeah, 100%. So I completed sort of the Couch to 5K thing before I broke my leg. And then afterwards, I'd start doing it again, knowing that it's good for your mental health and that kind of thing, but nowhere near what I was doing, what I do now. The room that it left in my life to be able to commit to doing the running was nothing short of life changing.
Yeah.
And I think I've said to other people before, I remember when I quit drinking, and it had been a year. And I said, this is the start of a new chapter for me. I can confidently say now, I won't drink again. And this is the start of a new chapter. And it wasn't a new chapter. I closed that book and it was a whole new book. The person I am today is unrecognizable from the person that I was 5.5, 6 years ago. I'm just a different person. My priorities changed, my values have changed. How I feel about myself and my family has changed. I'm unrecognizable. I'm a completely different person. And how powerful is that? That is incredible. And I did that one thing. I decided one day I wasn't going to pick up a drink anymore. And that's all I did. That's it. And it is life changing, really is.
I totally agree with you. It is single-handedly the one thing I will never ever regret doing.
100%. And I think it's not an easy journey either. When I talk to people who are asking me about stopping themselves, they'll say, "Did you notice any benefits straight away?" And realistically, no. I wish I did. I wish it was instant because more people would do it. You know, if after 2 weeks you started waking up with fresh skin, or you started bouncing out of bed with tons of energy, or your sleep instantly improved, so many more people would do it because you would be able to see that that was the thing that was causing the problem in the first place. And I guess going back to why I quit and the reasons around that time, what I didn't fully appreciate until after I drank is that the way that I was feeling was a vicious cycle caused by my drinking. Actually, when I think about it, that depressive cycle of I'm not good enough, I can't do anything, I don't have the motivation to do anything about it, I'm eating too much, I can't control it because when I have a drink, I'm eating too much and I can't control it. And it's just a vicious cycle all the time. I'm tired all the time. I used to drink on an evening to try and keep myself awake because I was so tired. Instead of just going to bed, I'd have a glass of wine because that kept me awake. But then, of course, you don't sleep very well when you've had a drink. And the next morning, you're still tired and you wake up and you're still tired. Or you're stressed. Or you're feeling anxious. So you have a glass of wine to try and quiet that noise down in your head. And the next morning, you wake up and the noise is still there. You know, you've not cured the noise. You've not dealt with the noise. You've just got a little bit of respite from it for 24 hours. That's all you've done. And that's been really, I wish you got all the benefits in that first month. You know, that first month of quitting in that dry January or the sober October, you get to the end and you go, wow, that was incredible. That was what a life-changing thing has just happened there. I'm going to continue with this, but it's not until about 3 months in that I started noticing my sleep getting a little bit better. Didn't feel as tired and cranky. I didn't stop wanting a drink until 6 months after quitting.
I'm nodding away here because I think instantly I felt mentally that I was actually doing something every morning, and I was waking up with this kind of, yes, I didn't drink last night, and so that was a boost. And then I was committing to posting on Instagram every day and committing to sort of be really reflective in that process. And I was wanting to see changes, and I was desperately taking daily pictures and looking at my skin. And then I had that big breakout of rosacea in month three. And that was could have been really disheartening, but I stuck at it and I stuck through it. And then, of course, it went completely. So I think sometimes it can actually get some things can get worse before they get better as your body detoxes. I don't know if you found that.
Yeah, I think there's got to be some truth in that, surely. I think at 3 months I wanted to see my hair growing back, and I got that feeling of, oh, I've got baby hairs coming out, and that was at the 3 month mark, and that was something that they'd told me was going to happen in a book. My hair was going to start growing back, and it did. And I kind of at that point, it's a validation. Then you go, oh, I expected this benefit, and it's yeah, all right, it's happened. It took 3 months, but it's happened. So if it's going to have that much of an impact on my hair, imagine what's happening on the inside, the bits that I can't see. I remember when I said I stopped wanting a drink at 6 months. That's not strictly true. Actually, at around the 6 months mark, that was the first day where I'd not thought about having a drink in the day. And how weird is that? That's concerning, isn't it?
So it wasn't that you were thinking about it and tempted. It was just that it was just occurring to you a lot during the day, or you'd drive past the shop, or so you'd see somebody on telly with it, and it would trigger those thoughts.
Yeah, because it's ingrained in everything you do. We talk about it being a hobby and it being associated with everything. You go to the theatre, you're going to get a glass of wine. You go on holiday, you're going to have a beer. You're going to have, and that's the thing, isn't it? It's because it's so ingrained in everywhere. And when I finished work and I started cooking dinner, there's a nice glass of wine waiting for me, and that becomes the thing that I do. I have a glass of wine while I'm cooking dinner, and that's wonderful. Second glass of wine with my dinner, third glass of wine once I've got my feet up and the kids are in bed. Perfect. That was my time, and I missed that. And I think it was that glass of wine that I missed the most for the longest amount of time. It was that drink. The Sunday cooking wine. You start making dinner at midday. Midday's fine. It's past the yard. I know it's allowed at 12 o'clock because it's no longer breakfast time. And you're putting the meat in the oven and you're putting the wine in the gravy, and it's an extra glass of wine for me. We'll have a glass of wine. And then after your dinner, you might want a small whiskey to help wash that down with a coffee or a brandy and then you're having port with your cheese. It's not just we're going to enjoy the cheese, it's let's have port with the cheese. And it's the association of alcohol with everything, and it's so hard to unpick, and it takes such a long time for you to stop associating alcohol with everything.
It does. It does. And they're only thoughts, they're not magical. I do say that they can't make us act. They can make us uncomfortable, but they can't make us act. And so we're still very much in control of doing something else, distracting us off. What did you do in those moments? How did you ride that out?
I think it's exactly what you said, the thoughts, and it's how you choose to act on those thoughts, which determines where you go with your sobriety journey, I think. So the first time that Adam and I went out, so we'd quit on the 28th of December, and then we booked a Valentine's meal, and it was the first time that we were going out on our own, sober. And we went to this stunning fish restaurant in Scarborough. We love Scarborough. We're there quite a lot. And it's just one of those diamond in the rough places. It's so beautiful. I just love it. And there's an amazing fish restaurant which was there. And we walked in, and the owner recognized us. Oh, come in, come in. You've got a table booked. We've got the Valentine's special on today. I'm like, oh, great. We'll go for that. And he's like, okay, I'll get your bottle of champagne put over to your table. Oh, no. No, we're not drinking. That one was the easy no that day. That was the first and only easy no. No, thank you. What can I get you instead? We'll have a bottle of alcohol-free beer. So we had a bottle of Beck's Blue each. And he showed us over to our table, and we sat down, and there was an open bottle of champagne in an ice bucket, with two champagne glasses right on our table. And I looked at Adam and I was like, what? We're so far in our journey, and that was the hardest no. And I said, can we just sit here and ignore it? And those voices are there. How do you get through them voices? And we said, no, we need someone to remove this. And so we asked a waitress to come and take it away, and the people on the next table were like, we'll have it. So they were overjoyed. They had the best Valentine's meal ever. They've got two bottles of champagne. But we were sat there feeling a little bit deflated. We'd paid for this meal with this free bottle of champagne, and we felt we'd been shortchanged a little bit. It was there on our table ready for us to take it. And that's kind of set the mood a little bit for that evening. And we didn't expect it to be that hard. And then afterwards, we planned to do what we would normally do when we were drinking. We're going to go out to some of the bars that we enjoyed, some of the real ale pubs. Surely they'll all have alcohol-free alternatives for us. Nowhere. They have
No.
not. So one place we found had some Heineken Zero, and we managed to have a couple of drinks in there, but the vibe was off. We'd have to just turn down this champagne. We'd been into various different pubs, which were our favourites, and they didn't have any alcohol-free stuff, so we were drinking soda or pop. And there's only so many glasses of that you can drink before you get a bit sick of that. So we were a bit deflated, to be quite honest. And we went back to our hotel room, and we got in bed tired and grumpy, to be quite honest. Grumpy on Valentine's night, fed up, feeling like we weren't ever going to be able to do this again. And it was a bad experience. And we prepared better next time, shall we say. So the following time that we went out was about 3 weeks later, and we booked to go and see a tribute band. And same place, so we went back to Scarborough and we stayed over again, but this time we were way more prepared. And we weren't going to go out drinking afterwards because we knew none of the places had alcohol-free beers. So we're going to go to this place and then we're going to go and get some food afterwards. We're going to go watch this band and then get some food. And then we were going to go back to our hotel. And we had the best night. It was fantastic. And we were singing along to the band. We went and had food after. We chatted to each other. Luckily, they had some alcohol-free drinks on. And when we went to bed, we weren't grumpy. And we were like, actually, we can do this. And I remember someone saying to me once, saying no to a drink is flexing a muscle. And it the first time you do it, it's hard. It's so hard because everything inside you says, just do it. Just do it. The easy answer is do it. You know what it feels like. You need it. You deserve it. And saying no to that the first time is the hardest. The second time you say no to it is the second hardest time. And then the third and then the fourth. But it's a muscle that you flex. And eventually you don't have to say no anymore because you already know what the answer is. And I think it took 12 months. It was 12 months before we turned to each other and we said it out loud. I don't think I'm going to drink again. I think that's it for me.
That is amazing. And what a brilliant sort of description of what a night out sober when it doesn't go to plan is like. You know, I've had times where I've looked and thought, really, in the early days, where I've thought, oh God, this is boring, or oh, I just want to go to bed.
Yeah.
And I've chosen carefully now which things I say yes to.
Yeah. That is, and you're so true. And people talk about triggers and avoiding triggers. And certainly early days, you really have to because you've got to protect yourself.
Let's move on to the three areas then. So what's your first area that you'd say has improved the most? Have you touched on it already or?
Yeah, the biggest change for me was the focus that I was able to give on my own health. Being very overweight, I was obese and very overweight, but struggled with the cycle of being able to quit drinking, to reduce the swelling and inflammation, to stop myself from overeating when I've had too much to drink, the willpower, having the time and capacity and to be able to dedicate to working on myself and my physical health. And I had all the excuses. You know, it was never because of the drink that I was not meeting my health goals. I could manage the drink. It was just my health. I just couldn't do anything with my health. But the kids were a big thing. You know, I look at them and they're growing up and growing up quickly and they need their mum. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I can't wait until my kids are in bed so that I can pour myself a glass of wine. And I don't want to be that person. I didn't want to be that person. So yeah, stopping drinking was the big open door that I needed to be able to unlock what I wanted to achieve in my health. And since then, I picked up the Couch to 5K with gusto, healing my broken leg and learning to run again, because that was a challenge. It was painful at first and I was very nervous about putting any weight on it in case it, you know, just fell apart underneath me. But I was very unfit, you know, I was very overweight, very unfit, and very self-conscious about it. And I wanted to be around longer for my kids growing up. So I had to put that as my focus. And when I think back to that time, I've got photos on my Instagram really early of me in my first running outfit. I was so proud. I'd got my running outfit on. And I was just, you can just see the flush in my face because I'd had too much to drink the night before. And I'd run my first park run and you could barely see my eyes because my face was so puffy. And my body just couldn't cope with the running. I couldn't do both. I can't run and drink, you know. At the same time, it had to be one or the other. And unfortunately, the drink was winning every time. It was winning over my eating habits. It was winning over my running habits. It was winning over my health goals. And I'm in no illusion that I was on a path that was not going to take me down a great place. The drinking was only ever going to get worse because, you know, the bottle of wine turned into a bottle of wine and a whiskey or two or five. And before I knew it, I was adding a litre of scotch to the shop every week in addition to my, you know, bottles of wine and the beers and just, you know, it was only ever going to get worse. I was never going to stop. This was only ever going to become worse and worse. So I had to change. And I mentioned before, I think the real epiphany for me now is how I can run. I'm a runner now. When I first started out running, you're not gentle with yourself when you start running. You go, oh no, that person there with the Lycra and the headbands and the snazzy, that's a runner, not me, who's got my old plimsolls and the jogger bottoms that I use for painting in and some vest that I've picked up, you know, just out there running, just trying to run for 30 seconds without my chest collapsing or whatever. I couldn't run. But I did, and because I stopped drinking, I now run for fun, which, how mental is that?
I know. If you told me, who knew?
Who knew?
Who knew it could be fun? I thought you were all lying, you running people. I love it. I really do enjoy it. Okay, so like the first 1 or 2K, you're kind of thinking, oh, how far am I going today? And you know, the mental chatter starts. But I was like you. Somebody said to me, they gave me this piece of advice and said, well, just run the first K and then walk. I'm like, I can't run a K, 1K. I can't run that. I can't run for 1 minute.
Yeah.
I don't think they under, even though I was going to the gym, I wasn't fit, not aerobically fit.
Yeah.
Like that. And there's a buzz when you're able to breathe deeply and you see that VO2 score going up. That's amazing.
Definitely, yeah. I'm all about the stats and the data. I absolutely love it. Because you can see yourself physically improving. And one thing that I get from running that I never had before is you become your own self-champion. So there's no one out there running with me, clapping along, going, you're doing this. Great work, Sarah. This is fantastic. And when you hit a good time or you run your first K for the first time without stopping, when you get to the end of it, you're smiling and you're high-fiving yourself. You become your own champion and advocate. And that's so powerful. And I never had that when I was drinking. My other hobby, the hobby of drinking, never gave me that. It gave me feelings of depression and self-worthlessness. And, you know, and I didn't like myself. I didn't like the person I was, and I couldn't get out of it. So I drank more because drinking made me a fun person and people wanted to be around me when I drank. And I became someone that I liked more when I drank, until I drank too much and then became someone I didn't like. And you don't get any of that when you're a heavier drinker. But running gives me everything that I need. I've become someone who loves myself. You know, I'm not a perfect person. I don't have the perfect body. I'm not a perfect runner. I'm sure people would criticize my form every day of the week, but I am a runner and I do go out and run and I hit goals and smash goals and aim for things and mix things up, and I enjoy it, you know, to an extent. You know, that first K is always, you know, pretty hard. I think everyone will tell you that first 1 or 2K is not a good first.
I'm so pleased it's not just me with that. You know, it's like the self-talk just creeps in, going, oh, she could just do three. Should we just do three today? No.
My favorite part of running is the ending. When I've stopped and I go, that was a good run. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. And you have to take a picture. You have to take a picture of the watch or something just to go, because you haven't run it if you haven't got pictorial evidence.
It didn't happen. Yeah, it
yeah.
didn't happen.
That is absolutely excellent. Health, what an amazing benefit.
Yeah.
So definitely. What's your second?
I wanted to be a better parent and wife. I touched on it briefly. When I was a drinker, and that was my hobby, that was the bit that I felt I deserved. That was my reward and my treat at the end of a busy day. If I'd had a stressful day, glass of wine, please. If I'd struggled with parenting, that'll be a glass of wine, please. If I was celebrating or I was happy, I was having a glass of wine. And I'm a good parent, I'm a good mum, and I love my kids and my husband. But having a drink made me short-tempered and impatient, and I couldn't wait to get the kids to bed at the end of a stressful long day so that I could give myself my treat, my reward for getting to the end of the day with a glass of wine. And it's really hard to say that out loud, because I would never say that out loud. You know, that's not something, but it was a thought that I had. You know, come on, it's 8 o'clock now. To bed, boys. You've had your time. It's mummy time now. Mummy time, glass of wine. Mum wants to sit down and watch some telly and relax with a glass of wine. And that is, and I'm not proud of those thoughts. And now I still have times when I'm like, come on, kids, it's 8 o'clock, it's quiet time, it's adult time now. I want to watch what I want to watch on telly. You've been around all day. But I don't have it because I want to have a drink anymore. And I used to drink because I was tired and I wanted to maximize the amount of time that I could spend on my own without my kids around. And that would mean sometimes drinking more to try and keep awake and keep up on a night time. That was the thing that I was treating myself with and that I was going to be doing on a night time. And that then made me tired and short-tempered and impatient. And I would shout at the kids for little things just because I wasn't feeling great myself. And that wasn't fair on them. And it could just be they've left the shoes by the front door, but that would be a big irritation to me because I'm tired and I'm always tired. I was always tired when I was drinking. And then same with my husband. He's had his fair share of arguments with me because I'd had too much to drink on a night time. And you could never plan it, could you? Your best nights were the ones you didn't expect to be the best nights when you were drinking. And you could line everything up to make sure it was going to be the best night. And by the end of it, you could be sat in tears on a toilet saying that my husband doesn't love me anymore. And what had he done? He'd got me the wrong drink at the bar, or it was never a sensible reason that I decided that he didn't love me anymore. It must be the end of our relationship because you spent too long talking to somebody else.
I know.
And
We're not rational, are we, when we've had a drink?
you make it up in your head, don't you? You make up scenarios that aren't there, and it made me an irrational person on the night time. And then the next morning when you open your eyes and it all comes back, what you've just done. The evening before, you didn't go to bed talking to each other. You're shouting.
Oh.
And you'll sit there and you'll go, when you've had a drink on the night time, I'm going to write this down because I know I won't remember why I've argued with you in the morning. But I am right. I'm right about this. It's all rubbish, isn't it? You're not right. You've just decided you're going to have an argument because you're feeling emotionally numb from the drink and you want something to happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we don't argue. It's quite funny. We don't argue now.
I know.
We haven't argued at all. We're very rational, normal people.
I wonder, I say this a lot. I wonder how many marriages and relationships and things actually would be better or wouldn't end if it wasn't for alcohol. I mean, how many drunken rows in an early relationship has that sort of seen the relationship off? There's no tolerance, there's no understanding, there's no nothing. But we're exactly the same. We don't argue now. We have a discussion. And again, I say this all the time. And it's not that we've got the perfect marriage. We haven't. We disagree, but we don't fall out.
And drink takes it up a level as well, doesn't it? I think that's the thing.
Oh, God, yeah.
So you can have a rational discussion with someone and you can disagree with someone, and that's absolutely fine, and you can have conversations about it or not. Because that's something I could never do when I drank, is just leave it. Just leave it. Go and get on with your life. This is not a discussion that needs to happen now or ever, maybe. And you can't do that when you're drunk. It's you get a thread. And you keep pulling at it and pulling at it and bringing it up and talking about it. And I used to think that drinking made me a better wife because I could be open with my husband and we'd have long chats till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, putting the world to right. And I was talking to my husband ahead of this podcast. And I was like, do you miss that bit? Do you miss the ability to lubricate almost those conversations? And his opinion was quite interesting, and his take on it was quite interesting. He said, I don't think we were actually talking to each other. I think we were just talking at each other. And actually, I don't remember any of your viewpoints from those conversations, and you probably don't remember mine. We were just using each other as a soundboard. We weren't
Yeah.
discussing anything. We were talking at each other on those conversations. Yeah.
That's very insightful.
Yeah, so do I miss those late night conversations over a glass of wine, putting the world to rights? No, because I don't remember any of them. I can't tell you what we talked about now. It was probably a load of rubbish, And we have better conversations now because they actually mean something.
And you can remember them now, can't you?
And they're not likely to turn into an argument where I'm storming up to bed thinking our marriage is over again, which, is what used to happen quite regularly because I'd drink too much and I was overtired and stressed because I was drinking. And it was just, you never get out of that cycle. It was just over and over, rinse and repeat every time. Yeah. So it made me, so stopping drinking has 100%. Oh, I'll give you an example of the whole being a better wife and parent. So we went to Centre Parks, as you do as a family, and this was whilst we were drinking. And we spent a lot of time in the sports bar having drinks while the kids played in the soft play area. And we booked maybe two activities in that time. And the rest of the time was, shall we have a drink? Let's have a glass of wine. Let's go to the pub. Let's have some. And it was kind of the whole day was pitted into, we're going to have, this is what mum and dad want to do as a hobby, and we'll do one or two activities the kids want to do. And then we went to Centre Parks the year before last for my youngest's birthday. And we booked the entire weekend of activities because we weren't drinking. And it was the first thing in the morning to the last thing at night. And we were doing rock climbing, treetop aerial things. We were shooting each other in the laser quest. And by the end of the weekend, we were exhausted. And we all sat there and said, that was the best holiday we've ever had. That was the best holiday. The connection that you get with your family, the stuff that you're willing to do, and the risks you're willing to take to try something new and come out of the box is brilliant when you're not drinking because you haven't got that there holding you back. You're not sat there thinking, I need to get back for 7 o'clock because I'm gonna have a glass of wine, or you might intend to go to the swimming pool later, but by the time you've had a couple of glasses of wine at lunchtime, you're feeling a bit bloated and tired now. So actually we'll not bother going to the swimming pool. And that's what a shame. And I'm not saying one way is better than the other, but for me, it's just a stark contrast. The connection that we have as a family is massively improved. Yeah, it's lovely, really.
So what's your third thing?
My third thing is the peacefulness that I feel now. It's a sense of peace and well-being that I never had before. And I remember when I used to drink. I used to drink because I was tired to try and keep myself awake. But also when I was stressed and I felt like there was too much going on in my head. There's too much going round and round. The voices and the noise in my head won't stop. I was stressing and anxious about things. And instead of dealing with those things or doing something about it in a productive way, I quietened that noise by having a drink. And it's an anesthetic, right? So you have a drink, it dulls the mind, it slows you down, it impacts your nervous system. So you don't feel those things. It's numbing you. So the noise wasn't there. That noise is there when you stop drinking still. So it's not peaceful insofar as the noise stops in your head. But what you get is clarity, and you get an ability to be able to deal with that noise and the anxiety and the stress because you are clear-headed and you're well rested and you are mentally and physically in a better place. But the noise never actually really goes away. You just learn to deal with it. And the thing that I found, what I should have been doing all along, and instead I would reach for a drink, is when I'm tired, I just need to go to bed. And if I go to bed at 8 o'clock or I go to bed at 10 o'clock at night, it makes no difference. If I am tired and I am overwhelmed and that noise gets too much, go to bed because tomorrow morning it will be different. It'll be silent. And what you don't get with drink is that. Because if you quieten the noise by using a substance, when that substance wears off, the noise is still there, but now you have the noise and the after effects of the substance you've been using, which makes that noise harder to cope with. And if you know you can quieten that noise by using a substance like alcohol, you will use it because it's a tool in your armory. And that's then when it becomes dangerous, because what you're doing then is it's gone from the realms of being a hobby to the realms of self-medicating. And that's dangerous because then you start to believe, I need this drink. because I've finished work and I'm stressed and I need this to help me come down. And I hear that a little bit from people who talk to me about their own drinking habits. And they will say, you know, that one that helps me come down on a night time, that quietens the noise, that's the one I need. That's the one I need. And it's like, well, if you need it, then is that a problem? You know, is that an issue you've got there that you probably need to address? When you're a kid, you don't need alcohol to deal with problems. And when you're going through your teens, you're growing and the hormones and everything, you're learning so much. The world is a massive place and it hits you hard every single day. And as kids, they're dealing with that, but they're not having to go out and drink. You know, as adults, we get it comparatively easy. We understand our place in the world as adults a little bit more than perhaps children do. But we're using something else to help get through the day. You know, we're using something to self-medicate. And that's, yeah, I think that's the truth of alcohol sometimes. Sometimes it's a party thing and sometimes actually it's not a party thing. It's something that we're using because we feel like we can't get through a day or a week or a stressful situation without it. And that's a real shame. The power I have now that I don't drink to be able to deal with that is, it's a superpower. You know, like, I'm not going to implode. You know, things aren't going to just fall down around me. I'm not catastrophizing over small events that might have derailed a plan. Or whereas when I was drinking, these things were massive. They're out of my control. I'm so stressed. It's ridiculous. I'm going to get a glass of wine. You know, you've had a car accident. Let me get a whiskey for your nerves. You know, it's like, what are we doing? What is all that about? That's another level.
Oh, do you know, it has been amazing catching up.
I thought long and hard about the three things. I wasn't sure what to say because I didn't think that my three things were important enough. You know, they don't seem extreme. They don't seem powerful enough. I've not gone and climbed up a mountain and I haven't, you know, I don't know, come up with some medical advancement because I've stopped drinking. For me, the power is the impact that it's had on, the subtle impact that it's had on all of my life. Everything that alcohol used to touch, it no longer touches. And it was hard to come up with the three things because everything's been touched, but none of it is more important than the other. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm just a normal person who one day decided enough's enough, really. And I need to give this up because this is not the kind of person I want to be anymore. That's kind of the crux of it, I guess.
That's the point, isn't it? It isn't, it doesn't have to be massive changes. It's the little changes. And I would struggle, and I'm so pleased nobody's asked me for my three benefits. So I know I'm sort of being a bit cruel when I ask people for three. But you're right, you've described there how it's changed every element of your life. And it's been an absolute delight. I've been following you for years now, and I've been following your running and the sobriety. So it has been wonderful to have you on. Thank you so much for joining me, Sarah.
Likewise, Louisa. It's great to speak to you in person. I've followed you as well since the start of your journey. You're doing incredible work, Louisa. Carry on what you're doing. It's so powerful to have such vocal voices in the sober community. And it's been an honour to meet you, to be honest, because it's just lovely to meet up with you and share my story with you. It's been an honour. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you'd like any support with your sobriety, then please reach out. You can visit my website, louisaevans.com, where you'll be able to send me a message. And you can look at some of the things I've put together to help you. There are links to my Dry January podcast, my audiobook on Audible. As a clinical hypnotherapist, as well as a therapist, I have created lots of different hypnotherapy recordings that you can listen to help you on any subject. You'll find those on the website too, alongside my Sober Resilience course. As a listener of the show, you can use the code SOBERREBEL to buy one, get one free on any hypnosis or relaxation recording. I really hope you enjoyed this show as much as I enjoyed recording it. Have a great day. Until next time. Thank you.